From the Sri Sathya Sai Media Center in Prashanthi Nilayam, you are listening to Radio Sai Thursday Live. I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. And today we have a talk by Sri Indreshwar Singh Sirohi. Brother Indreshwar, who is the grandson of the Rajmata of Jamnagar, joined the Sri Sathya Sai Higher Secondary School in the year 1986 for his 11th grade and graduated from the Sri Sathya Sai Institute of Higher Learning in 1991 with a Bachelor's in Commerce. Having had the golden opportunity of close physical proximity of Bhagwan, Brother Indreshwar is a treasure trove of experiences and stories of Bhagwan's love and grace. This talk was delivered on the 20th of January 2019 in Brindavan Ashram as a part of the Samarpan program. For now, here is the talk by Brother Indreshwar.
At the very outset, I wish to express my gratitude to all those members of the staff and my brother students and alumni who have granted me this opportunity to share the families and my personal experiences with all of you today, this evening. Let me start with the family's tryst with divinity. Way back in 1965, my grandfather from the maternal side of the family was besieged with a host of problems. Almost everything that could go wrong in the abdominal cavity was severely impacted. The gallbladder, liver, spleen, kidneys, severe diabetic complications, glaucoma, and even blood pressure. The leading members of the medical fraternity had lost hope. And just then, when we thought all is lost, our family's guru, whom we fondly referred to as Guru Maharaj, he came to grandfather and presented a picture of Swami. Now I'm talking of 1965. You rarely had pictures of Swami, but he brought one and he said, "My job as the guru is to lead you to God. This is God incarnate on earth. Pray to him and all will be well." With infinite faith in his guru, my grandfather fervently prayed to Swami. And barely a few hours would have passed, and somebody arrived from Puttaparthi right up till Jamnagar and said, "Swami has sent this prasadam for you." They were vibhuti packets. And the vibhuti packets were given by Swami to this devotee long before my grandfather even started praying. Needless to say, he felt much better after taking the vibhuti and he braved a travel right up to Puttaparthi to show his gratitude to Swami. Swami welcomed him lovingly, and in the interview that ensued, he gave him a lot of blessings and then asked him as to what he would like more. Grandfather said, "I know my time is up, life is ebbing out, but I have a few things to finish, and if you can give me a little extension of time." And Swami gave him 12 months. And Swami said, "I'll give you 1 year." Exactly 1 year to that day, my grandfather left for the heavenly abode. And just then a message came from Swami, "Tell Rajmata," that's my grandmother, "that I have personally taken the soul of Jam Sahib to Somnath Temple." Many, many months later, when Swami came to Bombay, he graced my grandmother with a visit to her residence. And Swami was in the drawing room. My mother was in the dining room, just adjacent to the drawing room. And she was wondering. Swami had said, he has taken my father's soul to Somnath. I wish he gives a confirmation to me that this is really so. It was a fleeting thought. Just then, lo and behold, the dining room door opened and Swami looked at her, and when she saw Swami, the face had changed. It was her father's face. For a few moments, and then again it reverted back to Swami's countenance. Now, let's go down the corridors of time to a time when Bhagwan graced Gujarat with his divine presence. Presently in the narrative, at grandmother's behest, Swami, members of his family, devotees from the south, devotees from Gujarat, and grandmother and family were all traveling in a convoy from Jamnagar to Dwarka. Yes, it was a momentous time. They were in the making of history. Swami, the Yuga Avatar, traveling to his previous residence, Dwarka, whereas Krishna, he reigned supreme over the world. And can you imagine the kind of excitement with the devotees? It was palpable in the air. Everyone was sure that Swami would tell them an untold story of the past, stories of valor and chivalry, or probably of love and romance, or of the royal intrigues, show them a monument which they didn't know about, a relic of the past, or talk about the submerged citadel of yore, which had stood invincible against the test of time. They entered Dwarka. They were on the outer fringes of Dwarka, and the crowd started swelling. There was a state of confusion as everyone wanted Swami's Pada Namaskar. And because of the state of unrest, the authorities requested Swami that we are a little apprehensive about the security arrangement. Can you please come to Dwarka some other day? We are not able to control the crowds. And Swami obliged and turned around. A pall of disappointment descended upon the convoy as they slowly winded their way back to Jamnagar. This is not what they had expected. Here they were about to make history, and what happened is they've turned round. There was absolute silence. Nobody spoke in disappointment. Swami saw the feelings of the devotees, and somewhere along the drive, he stopped the convoy, alighted from the car, and went towards the sea. Over there, the ocean paid obeisance to him, and as he came back, he settled on the golden sands. He made a small mound of sand, made some kind of a drawing on the top. It was no rocket science. You're so close to Dwarka. Everyone knew he was drawing about Krishna. And then he put his hand in and plunged out an exquisitely carved statue of Lord Krishna. It was made of gold, and the mudra was Krishna playing the flute. And then Swami asked the devotees around, "What is this?" And everyone said, "Swami, it's a golden statue of Krishna." And then Swami asked grandmother, "Rajmata, kya hai?" "Oh Swami, ye to mere kanaiya hai, ye to mera lala hai." As she burst out in emotion, Swami said, "Others saw the gold, she saw her kanaiya." So Swami presented the statue to grandmother. Now everybody was a little upbeat, the emotions were lifted a little, and they made their way back to Jamnagar. But where you have the Lord Krishna and Sai Krishna, nutcut in their nature, the very embodiment of mischief, there was something else in the air. Next morning, a motley group of experts gathered under the umbrella of the ASI, that is the Archaeological Survey of India, gathered at the palace gates and said that soon a law is going to be placed which will be called the Annals of the Antiquity Act, and under that any object deemed by the authorities as a relic of the past, whether it comes out in your backyard or anywhere, is solely the property of the government. And this statue was found so close to Dwarka, they said this is an antique piece, and under the law soon to be formed, we have all the rights to confiscate it. You can imagine how grandmother was. Absolutely livid. She was a very strong woman, a lion of a person. She said, "Over my dead body, is anybody going to take this statue?" And there was total confusion in the house. She even summoned the erstwhile Jamnagar forces. We had the cavalry, the infantry, the artillery, and those people started coming in. She said, "We are not going down without a fight." All this is happening on the ground floor of the palace, and on the first floor, Swami is happily sitting on the jhula, swinging away merrily as if nothing is happening. Absolutely calm and tranquil. That is the God. He is Tatasth, forever the eternal witness, and his drama was playing on. It carried on for some time. It even passed into the social grapevine over there. People started getting scared. Bullets were going to fly around. Lots of people moved away from the vicinity. And then some pragmatic-minded people approached Swami and said, "Swami, can you please intervene? These Rajputs always find the glory in war, and they are going to love fighting." So then Swami called grandmother and said, "Rajmata, aise karo, unko bulao. Ask them to date the statue." So grandmother knew that Swami was up to something. So she went down, but a little reluctantly, went down with the statue. The experts were summoned, and as they were ushered in, she said, "Date it." Now, you would be aware that the art of dating an artifact is an art. It's not an empirical science. You look at the expression of the statue, the eyes, whether they are looking at a short distance or are they looking at infinity, whether the lips are smiling or just straight or a beautific expression on the face, what are the mudras like, the stylization of the apparels, the ornamentation which adorns the statue, and placing all these into circumspect, that is how people decide that which era did this statue belong to, or which region of the country did the statue belong to. Now, they kept looking at the statue and turning it around and round, and they were just not able to figure out even a few hours later. And finally they said, this statue embodies elements of diverse eras, diverse periods of time, diverse regions. We cannot place it to any one particular region. And till they can't do it, they cannot prove it is an antique. So they went back empty-handed. Triumphant, grandmother came back to Swami and related this story. Everyone was very happy and they retired. The next day they had to go to, Swami was going to go to the Ayurvedic college which my grandmother had put up. They were going to a sainik school. Then the day later they were going, Swami was going to inaugurate the Digvijay Dwar at Somnath, which grandmother had put up. So there was a lot of excitement. And the next morning, something else happened. The central power dispensation at that point of time was not known to be benign towards royal family members in general. And very strong personalities like grandmother in particular. So this fired a second salvo. This came in the form of an already enacted act, which was the Gold Control Act. Now, for your knowledge, under the auspices of this act, all the gold was taken away from people when it was a little in excess of a few grams that people have as jewelry, and all of that was melted, and that is how India got its gold reserve to print its currency. It is necessary for a country. Under that act, this statue, which was about 15 inches high and weighed close to about 2-2.5 kilos, was definitely falling under the purview of the act. And this was a high level team which had come down. And Swami once again said to grandmother, Rajmata, usko jaake poocho, is it 22 carat, 24 carat, what is it? By now people were sure that Swami was up to another drama. So merrily she went down and told them, here's the statue. And they were assayers, and they were government assayers. They knew their job inside out. And they looked at grandmother with a smug expression on their face. Very soon we will tell you what it is. It looks like 24 carat. And then we are going to go away with the statue. Time for you to say goodbye. And they took a file and they filed under the feet of Lord Krishna's statue, you know, at where the souls are. And they filed a little, took the quantum of the residue that came out and started testing it. Few minutes later, they again started filing a second time and again testing it. And this carried on and on. The government file had many, many Pad Namaskars of Lord Krishna before they finally decided to tell the family, it was not 22 carat gold, it definitely wasn't 24 carat gold, it wasn't Kundan gold, which is 100% gold, it was nothing known to mankind, it didn't come under any of the elements known to man in the universe. A Leela of Swami. And of course, everyone was very, very happy. Now, from the nutcutness of Swami, I will tell you of the mischief that Swami played with me. Okay? I had appeared in my 10th standard examinations, done very well, and had come back to my place in Bombay, and with a group of my friends who also happened to be my cousins, and we were a mischievous lot, had decided that we will join St. Xavier's College, and we had fixed up everything. All of us had state level and national accreditations in sports and shooting and swimming, etc. So the entire gang knew how to get in on our sports merit. We'd picked up our bikes, our cars. We were sure of the masti and hangama that we were going to do. And somewhere in between, we thought we'll suffer a little bit of education too. Everything was pakka. All was set. And one fine morning, grandmother tells me, Gopal, we are going to Parthi tomorrow. Oh my God, I thought. Swami can turn the tables. I was scared. In fact, tears started glistening in my eye. Grandmother thought they were of bliss. They were of absolute fear. I was truly scared what Swami will do. I quickly got back to my gang. Tomorrow, I'm going to Parthi. What to do? They consoled me. Don't be so impudent. You're only going for one day. Nothing will happen. Swami will ask a few questions, a few lines at the most. You can't be granted an audience by just going down for a day. Just relax. And oh yes, pray to him. So I said, fine. The next day as we reached Puttaparthi, in a few moments of Swami coming out, we found ourselves huddled in the interview room. Mother, grandmother and aunt representing the ladies' side, myself all alone on the other side of the room representing the male bastion, feeling all the more alone because I was isolated in the world, even God was not with me. It was a bad state to be in. Now, very fervently I'd kept my eyes closed and I was praying, Swami, Swami, please don't talk about my studies. And Swami continued talking something else with grandmother, and suddenly he looked in my direction. Rajmata, Gopal ka studies ka kya? Oh my God. I quickly bolted up, knelt on my knees and said, Swami, don't worry. This is a mortal reassuring God. Don't worry. Everything is looked after. I've done well in my 10th standard examinations, almost got into St. Xavier's. By your grace, all is well. And grandmother told Swami, Swami, this boy doesn't understand anything. I would be very happy if he studies at your lotus feet. And then, you know what Swami said? हाँ हमारे स्कूल में पढ़ सकता है लेकिन एंड देयर वाज अ लॉन्ग गैप व्हाट ही सेड यस ऑफ कोर्स ही कैन स्टडी इन माय स्कूल But, and that long gap, you know, in that I saw my entire school life reviewed in front of me. Now, everything that you do in a public school, go out, jump over the wall, go out and eat, see movies, the pranks, the mischievous, everything that you do would not match up to Swami's high standards of expectations. And I didn't know what will he pick up and talk about. I was so scared. And then Swami said, "Hamare school mein no meat, no non-veg." I picked on to it. I said, "Yes, Swami. I used to eat non-veg food. I cannot do about without non-veg food, Swami." Swami said, "Yes, I know. Dekho." And then Swami is explaining to my grandmother, "Dekho Rajamata, Bombay mein tumhara place mein Mondays, Thursdays, because of Swami and Lord Shiva, no non-veg food." You know what Gopal does? He goes down Altamount Road, Kemp's Corner to Gwalia Tank, and udhar wo Muslim, uske paas kebabs hai, udhar jaake tripti karke aata hai. So, that was true. It was very true. On those days, I would go down the route Swami mentioned, indulge in my kebabs, well saturated, I would come back, and people would ask me, "Gopal, you're not eating today?" "No, I don't feel like, I'm not feeling well today." Every Mondays and Thursdays, I was not well. So, and people thought, "Poor chap, he doesn't like eating vegetarian food, which I called rabbit food." So it was fine. Now Swami revealed the secret. So I kept nodding my head. It was beautiful. The Lord of the universe is on my side. I am safe. Then Swami said, "That is on 2 days of the week. But in his previous school, Rajkumar College, every day they are served meat. And even then, he runs away outside. Isn't it true?" "Yes, Swami." That is what was going to save me. "Wo pavilion ke piche wall ko jump karke bar jata hai." "Yes, Swami." And then Swami let out, "Kabhi Bharti ke paas jata hai, to kabhi Reshma ke paas jata hai." Oh my God! And then Swami stopped, and I was stunned. How could Swami do this to me? My face went pale. And my grandmother is looking at me, looking at Swami. And Swami never explained that Bharti was my favorite omelette stall of a hawker who was walking outside the school, you know, wall, peddling his wares. And Reshma was my favorite kebab ki lari. And depending on the amount of money that was jingling in my pocket, I would either go to Bharti or go to Reshma, and both were men by man. But the way Swami put it, I was in a fix. And grandmother flew onto Swami's feet. "Swami, bachao, save my grandson. Please keep him in your school. Swami, it is this, he's a good boy, but it is his Rajput genetics. They just can't help it. Swami, please save him." And Swami looked at me sternly, but a mischievous glint in the eye. "Aur bolu?" I said, "No, Swami, you've done enough damage for the day. Hamara school mein aata hai?" "Yes, Swami." "Acha." And very soon the interview was over. Back in Bombay, I huddled back into my group of mischievous friends, and we had to find a way to outwit God. Otherwise, I was going to be in Baba's school. Now, just to tell you, I loved Swami with all my heart. But whenever I came to Vrindavan, to Puttaparthi, I saw this beautiful army in white, so disciplined, singing bhajans, Vedas, chanting, clapping their hands. That was not the life I envisaged for myself. I wanted to join the army and be marching in the ranks of olive green. Little did I know that Swami wanted me to have the olive branch and be in the ranks of the white army of His. So here I am with my friends. I told them what transpired, and they said, they went out, they made some inquiries, and they told me a beautiful consolation idea. Don't worry. In Baba's college and school, there are no recommendations, there are no preferences, there is no bias for or against. You have to do very well in the written examination. So just go and do badly in the written examination and all will be well. Wow! I was so happy. And I didn't study. Just about 5 days before I left for Puttaparthi for my written examinations, a Sai devotee came across and said, "Oh Gopal, you're going to Parthi. Very, very happy. Please keep up the name of the family. Oh, you must do very well in your examination." It hit me like a rock. Oh my God. I will have to do well. I must think about the name of the family. And therefore, in those 5 days, I studied hard, got past the written examination, and now I was in the interview room. Now you can well imagine the trepidation going on in my heart. I had about 10-15 minutes without going to decide my life, whether I was going to be in an area of discipline or full of masti. And I knew I had to mess up the interview. You won't believe it, I prayed to Swami, "Give me a chance." And a chance presented itself. One of the members on the panel asked me, "Do you sing bhajans?" I seized the opportunity. "Bhajans? No, I don't know any bhajans. Yes, people in my house keep singing bhajans. Every day we have bhajans. But I don't find them interesting. I don't know any bhajans." "Oh, then can you sing? What can you sing?" "I only know Hindi movie songs. I had heard that Hindi movies was a strict taboo over here. So I thought they'll bundle me out." Instead they said, "Oh, sing a song." I said, "Oh my God." So I closed my eyes and I thought, if I not only sing a Hindi movie song, but a song where there had been an indecent scene of an exposure, they'll definitely throw me out. So I closed my eyes and started singing. My voice is like that of cacophonics. But I started singing, "Ram teri ganga meli ho gayi hai, paapiyon ke paap dhote dhote." For those of you who don't know, Lord Ram, the Ganges, has got sullied by the sins of the people and we wish to redeem it. And then when I opened my eyes, I expected these people to be tearing towards me, to throw me out. And what do I see? Somebody is swinging, somebody is tapping with the pen on the table. Oh, Gopal, you see, you are the right kind of material to join our college. What? I said, I sing only Hindi movie songs. Yes, you could have told us you know a bhajan, but your voice is bad. And we wouldn't have persevered, but you spoke the truth. Now that is what we like. And then, even when you sang a song, see, this is sanskar, my boy. You thought of Ram, Ganga, redemption. And the rest is history. I joined Swami's college. A few months later, as I had got over the cultural shock of being in a very disciplined place, I was sitting in the portico in the evening, in evening bhajans, and pretty close to Swami's interview room door. And I was indulging in my favorite sports of the last 3 days. You see, what had happened? One gentleman had surreptitiously crept into my grandmother's good books, become a confidant, entered our various public charitable trusts, and he was happily helping himself to its assets, to its profits, incurring expenditures for himself, and I was upset. And I was feeling I should do something. I'd given a letter to Swami, but of no avail. So I was doing the only thing I could do. I was boxing his ears visually. I'd closed my mind, closed my eyes, and there I was bashing him up. And just as the full force of my biceps landed the metatarsals on his jaws, the interview room door opened and Swami came out. Gopal, sheepishly I got up. Shepherded by the Lord, I went in. Just Swami and I sat down, and Swami said, Gopal, why are you doing this? Doing what, Swami? Why are you committing murder? Murder? No, Swami, I haven't raised a finger. No, you have. In accordance with the divine laws, whenever you think of an emotion or a thought, it is equivalent to action. Thrice you thought of killing him. Have you not? Yes, Swami. So three times into seven folds, that is the law of karma. The repercussions would be seven times more. You have committed 21 murders. I was shocked. I couldn't believe it. I hadn't budged a finger, and here I was incriminated of 21 murders. And at the end of it, that gentleman was happily laughing his way to the bank, and I was the murderer. I couldn't understand the law. I felt it is highly unjust. But there was no point complaining. I quickly caught Swami's feet. Swami, help me. I don't know what to do. And Swami said, you want to hit him? I said, wow, I'm granted spiritual pardon, a reprieve. Can I hit him, Swami? Yes. Oh, again I started bashing him up, this time more vehemently. The Lord of the universe was with me. And then the scene changed. I was on a cliff. I could feel the strong wind lashing out against me. I could see down below were the waves of the ocean hitting at very sharp, jagged rocks. They were like shark's teeth jutting out of the ocean. And in front of me was the man I loved to hate. And I started hitting him. And as I gave him a vehement punch, I saw him lifting off the cliff, flying down. And now everything happened in slow motion, very, very slowly. And as I saw him going down, I heard Swami's voice, "Gopal, what is in his hands?" And I looked in his hands and I saw this cute bundle of joy and a lovely baby. But presently, it was petrified. It knew it was going down to its impending death. And I couldn't handle it anymore. I wasn't going to let that small baby die. I at once lunged forward and I caught hold of this man. Just a second ago, we were enemies fighting to death. With Swami's grace, we were now locked in a loving embrace. And I'm desperately trying to pull him back. But the law of gravity was against me. I was sweating with my glistening arms. I was losing my grip. I was losing my strength. I wasn't able to hold it any longer. My entire body was aching. I had, you know, strained every nerve and sinew. And when I thought they are going to fall down, I shouted, "Swami, help!" And at once, a surge of love I felt from my heart coming out, going towards them. And the next moment, I was strong and I pulled them over the precipice and we landed on the grass. I was so happy. And the next moment, the scene dissolved and I was back in the interview room. And Swami said, "Do you hate him now?" Strangely, I felt no hatred towards him. I said, "No." Do you like him?" I said, "Yes." "Do you love him?" I said, "I don't know about love, but I like him. I have nothing against him." He says, "Wonderful. Your karmic account with this person is over." Then Swami explained, "If there is somebody you are angry with, you hate, all you have to do is think of something that invokes the feeling of love in your heart. It could be thinking of God, Swami. It could be a small child, a puppy, a kitten, anything. And with that love, feel it in your body and engulf it to the person you hate. And your karmic account with that person will start getting reduced." From that time, I have been trying to practice it, and I think it's a wonderful visualization exercise. Swami has even taught, going a little further, to Phyllis Crystal, who's no more with us now, the visualization exercise called the Circle of Eight and cutting the ties that bind. It's worth going through that. Anyway, we carry on. A few months later from this incident, it was this time of the year, post the Sankranti discourse, that we were seated in the portico. And Swami came out from the interview room and beckoned two of us. Very happily, the two of us gingerly jumped across our brothers where they were seated and knelt before the Lord. Expectantly looking at him, Swami was happy with us. He's going to grace us with something. And as we looked at him, we saw a stern expression. Uh-oh, means trouble. The next moment, Swami started brandishing a letter. You know what this is? No, Swami, but I knew what it was. It was postal sadhana. For those of you who are not initiated into this world, Lord Krishna had given to the world Gyan Marg, Karma Marg, Bhakti Marg, but some geniuses in this Sai era had devolved a different way of evolution. What they did is they would write about some other people's faults to Swami and try and wash them off their sins and thereby hope to elevate their souls. This in our world was called postal sadhana. I only didn't know what it was for. And Swami said, both of you were sleeping during my discourse. This is a complaint. That was true. You see, in the just ensued, concluded sports and cultural games, we had taken part in a few events. Then in the sporting events and the athletic events, then the cultural event. So we were really very tired. And in the Sankranti discourse, when you find a loving brother's shoulder to lean on, fatigue plays on to you, Swami's beautiful voice acts like a lullaby, and we were lulled into the dreamland, both of us. Now, we wouldn't have got into trouble, but for the fact the accomplice of this crime was our sonorous snores, and they were heard by this gentleman who had done postal sadhana. So we looked down, we knew what was coming, we were in deep, deep trouble, and now we were praying to Swami. And Swami didn't look at us, he started asking authorities to get up. What have these boys done? Swami, a grievous crime. What is the kind of punishment that should be given to them? Swami, they deserve the most difficult punitive measures. But then, Swami, you are the ocean of compassion. You will act with mercy. That way, the authorities pulled us out of trouble. They had said yes and they had said no. Very kind of them. But Swami pursued on. He asked quite a few people. And then we saw there was one gentleman desperately trying to hide behind the pillar. And Swami called him, "Hey, come, you come here, read this letter." You see what had happened. This was our day of judgment. The Lord was the divine judge. The verdict was given by the jury unanimously that they should be let off scot-free. But the plaintiff was left. And Swami asked the plaintiff to come over. And that poor man haltingly started reading the letter. And it went somewhat like this. My dearest Lord of the universe, you have come down. It is the descent of the divine for the ascent of mankind. And for that you say, my only assets are my students. And here are two students who slept in your speech. They must be given the most difficult of punishments. And the letter carried on. And then he stopped. And Swami said, no, read further. And then the poor man had to give his own name because he was the author of the letter. Then Swami asked him, all right, what these boys did is wrong. What is the right way to listen to Swami's discourse? And he said, with great amount of single-minded concentration. Swami said, yes, that is right. Yes, concentration is in the realm of the mind. But if you go deep inside, transcending the mind, you go into your very being itself. And that is the right way to listen to a discourse. So what Swami was alluding to, in our scientific terms, was not the beta state or the alpha state, but the 7 to 4 hertz frequencies of theta and the 4 to 1 of delta state of being. And just to tell you, dear brothers, it doesn't mean you go to sleep during your classes when the teachers are talking to you and say that Swami has said we go deep inside and that's the right way to learn. But whenever you are sleeping at night, you can put on your headphones and go to the web page of Radio Sai, the audio archives, where you have Swami's discourses in Telugu. And that way you will have no other voice but the Lord's voice. And even if you don't speak Telugu, the soul understands everything. It will just imprint itself into your heart and it will blossom later in your thoughts, words and deeds. So with that, let me now come into what happened in Vrindavan. Like you are seated over here, we were all seated in Trayi Vrindavan, excited every evening because today Swami was definitely in a very playful mood. And sure enough, Swami waved his hand and brought out a large diamond. And Swami had been talking about the Kohinoor, about the fact that it had adorned the royal crown and the scepter of the British royal family. So we felt a diamond was coming. And true enough, it was a pedda diamond. And then Swami passed it across. And all the boys were looking at the diamond and, you know, doing like this and kissing the diamond. And Swami spoke, but rather softly. Heere ko kya dekh rahe ho? Heera idhar baitha hai. Yes, why are you looking at the diamond, the eternal hero with all the multifacets of the universe is sitting here? But the import of those words were lost because Swami spoke very gently. Then Swami spoke a little later. Why clasp the created? Why not clasp the hands of the Creator? Now, from here, which was the informal residence of the Lord of the Universe, let us go to the Elysian green mountains of Kodaikanal, which were his playground. And I have been lucky to be blessed with a few Kodai trips. Now what happened? One evening, Bhagwan came out a little earlier from his room and only about four of us were ready. So we quickly descended behind Swami And then Swami looked at us and said something which really took us off our feet. He said, "Chori karna hai?" Wow! Were we hearing right? Chori karna hai? Yes, Swami. So Swami tiptoed towards the pantry door. And just to give you the layout, there was the lounge where we were, and there was a pantry door, a very small pantry. And what was happening is Mrs. Ratanlal, whom we fondly called Bridge Auntie, was cooking some vadas and was placing it on the pantry after frying them. And what Swami did is, as she went back into the kitchen, just adjacent, Swami tiptoed to the vadas, picked up a few, brought it over to us and gave it to us. They were very, very hot. So, you know, we started juggling with it, but we quickly devoured the vadas because we again wanted to see Swami tiptoe and go back and get the next bounty of vadas. And Swami did that. The moment we finished it, you know, our gullets were burning, our hands were scorched, eyes were streaming, and yet we were very, very happy. And Swami went back again. Again brought this time a larger quantum of vadas. And we started thrusting it into our mouths, wanting to see the reenactment of the Makhan Chor. And we were the lucky gwalas. And the third time Swami went by, you know what happened? Mrs. Ratanlal had realized that these vadas were vanishing. And so she had hid behind in the kitchen to solve the mystery of the vanishing vadas. And no sooner did she see Swami putting his hands out for the vadas, she caught Swami's hand. "Swami, Devdu, kya aap kar rahe ho? Ye vadas main fry kar rahi hoon. Maine aaj sham ko sabko khilana hai. Main dusra bana nahi sakti. Aur aap kya kar rahe hain?" And here was the Lord of the universe in his own kitchen with his own material, picking his own vadas for his own students. And you know what he did? He sort of looked up, turned round, quickly came out of the pantry. "Ayyo, Durvasa Muni." That is the liberty that devotees can take with Swami when their hearts are filled with love. In the very same pantry, another incident took place. As I told you earlier, I wanted to join the army. And Swami had endorsed my plans. And what Swami did is he asked some elitist members to go and talk in New Delhi on my behalf and ensure that I could join the army. And I used to feel very embarrassed. I was absolutely sure that with my caliber and physical performance, with the fact that the last commander-in-chief of the Indian Army, Navy and Air Force was my grand uncle, another uncle was presently serving as a lieutenant general, a third uncle was a major general, I was definitely going to join the army. I mean, they were asking me to join my grandfather's regiment. You know, that's the kind of regimental loyalty. Of course I would get into the army. And I didn't like Swami asking the VIPs. And the VIPs had made a habit of coming back to Parthi. "Swami, I've talked to the defense secretary. We are looking into the matter." And then they would turn around and say, "Swami, we talked to a general and he said it will be done." And I was really getting bugged. These people, I thought, were taking Swami for granted. And therefore, I wanted to tell Swami, Swami, please don't do this. But when the opportunity presented itself, Swami was alone in the pantry, I walked in. There was a beautiful code of conduct amongst the students. If somebody had got Swami to themselves, they backed out. So wherever you are, that place became your interview room. So just Swami, myself, I wasn't ready for the moment, and I said, Swami, please don't do this. Please don't let these bad people take you for granted. And Swami pretended as if he had not heard. So I repeated a little louder, and Swami looked at me sternly, and he says, it's not for you to judge who is good, who is bad. I have use for every single person of the world. I was shocked. I didn't think God wanted to use people who are not virtuous. And then Swami pointed, see that? What is it over there? It was that innocuous looking screwdriver set that you find in the market. You know, the handle is in the middle and all the driver bits are on all sides. And Swami said, the very delicate screw head cannot fix a very large screw, can it? I said, no, Swami. And a very large screw head will be of no use with a very small screw. I said, yes, Swami. I said, likewise, I have use of every screw bit that exists in the universe. Needless to say, it is not the Lord who requires your help, but the Lord of the universe gives you a chance to redeem your soul by letting you play a role in His divine mission. From that, let us come to a mischievous story. Not only was my Lord mischievous, but in 2 years of being in His institution, some traits of mischief had remained in me, at a vestigial level, but they were still there. So in this trip of Kodai, I had the pleasure of being with the second batch of MBA, and I was the junior most over there. That granted me some kind of a diplomatic immunity. I could do any prank and get away with it because all the brothers were my seniors by a large margin. So what had happened? I had got into the routine of Kodaikanal, and I felt there were, you know, discourses and people ceremonizing, and I felt there was scope for some fun. So what I did? Whenever people would sit down in the morning sessions or in the evening sessions, I would creep behind one of my brothers and I would think that he has not had a chance to speak in front of Swami. It was my holy duty to grant him that chance. You see, what would happen is, Swami would look at the boys and say, any boys? And at once, like an ever-ready battery, some boys would get up and deliver a wonderful, eloquent talk. And I decided that I saw there were some boys who were not having the pleasure of talking. And it was my duty to ensure that they talk in front of Swami. So when Swami would look in the boy's direction and say, any boys, I would pinch that boy. And he would startle. And Swami would look at him, you, Nivura, come, come, give a talk. And that poor boy never knew he was going to give a talk till a second ago. He would get up and most of his talk was done in silence, standing next to Swami. Haltingly, he would mutter a few words and sit down, and I would enjoy it. It was my way of entertaining myself in Kodai. After I had scalped a few victims, on this fateful evening, when Swami looked in my direction and said, "Any boy," and I was moving forward to pinch my chosen blessed brother, he ducked down. And Swami saw my face. "You, see, youngest boy of our students, he is going to give a talk." I was not at all ready. As I got up, I was aware of the fact that this is the law of karma, but I never knew karma could be that instant. As I walked up to Swami, I said my salutary gestures, and there afterwards, absolutely silent. I couldn't think. My throat was choked with emotions. My eyes were crying. I couldn't think of anything, let alone speak. And then I looked at Swami about a minute or two later, and Swami made a small gesture which the others couldn't see, the VIPs couldn't see, but just one of my brothers in the front row could see. Just did like that. And that boy understood. He picked up a book lying next to him and opened it. Now in Kodai, we all sat very close to Swami. We were almost touching Swami. So that book was very close by. And then I understood, not only Swami, but Professor Kasturi came to my rescue. And I started reading the page that my brother opened. "Bharat, the acknowledged birthplace of spirituality, is in doldrums, and it is lying in a vortex of vices," and so on. The eloquent talk of Kasturiji carried on. And carried on for about two paragraphs, and Swami patted me and said, "Sit down." And I sat down very happily. Then Swami asked the VIPs, "Chinna boy, how did he talk?" Everybody said, "Swami, wonderfully. He sat in your divine presence, he stood in your presence, and then he cleared his mind. And when all the thoughts had sedimentated, all his beautiful teachings of Swami gravitated upwards. And in that crystal clear mind, he gave such a wonderful talk, Swami." And Swami was happy, and I had learnt my lesson. Probably because of that, I am comfortable talking with you today. Now, those same two boys who were seated over there, I'd grown a little close to them. I used to call them the Bengal Tigers because they hailed from there. And I decided that we could still do some mischief, but this time it wouldn't be physically, no act of pinching. It would be more refined. It had to be in a manner that nobody could figure out. So what we did, there was one very innocent boy. He was an elder brother, but very innocent, full of virtues. He used to meditate. So we went up to him and we said, "You know, you are like the Vidura." And he said, "Yes." He said, "Yes, you must ask questions to Swami which are very wise." So I said, "Wonderful. What kind of questions?" So we taught him something. Little did I know that he would place the question to Swami exactly the same way as I told it to him. He didn't change it at all, and it came out somewhat like this: Swami, if I murder a person, why should I be hanged? It is in his karma to die. It is in my karma to kill him. Swami didn't even look at him. He didn't answer him. Swami looked directly towards me and he said, "You boys love football. I will tell you in the language of football." And he drew an analogy. Those two were from Bengal, so they were naturally very passionate about football. And then Swami said, "Karma is like a game of football. The rules are fixed. The perimeter of the ground is fixed. You know you cannot play with your hands. You can only play with your feet. Likewise, the era in which you are born, the family in which you are born, the karmas of the family, your work environment, all of these form your play field, and the rules therein are the rules you have to play by. What is fixed in karma? Your family is fixed. So in the same way, in a game of football, it is fixed who is your team. You will play along with these people. Other part is also fixed. You will play against those people. That's your work environment, your bosses, everything, all the challenges that you meet in life. They may be very good players. But what Swami said, mind you, how you play the game is never fixed. It is up to you how you play. Do you sit outside and clap? Or do you just take a very narrow area and say, I'm the goalkeeper? Or do you go dashing forward, play with all your endeavor and score a goal? That is never ever fixed. And then Swami said, at any given point of time, there are multiple parallel destinies. And the difference between that is the difference between a prince and a pauper. With these few words, I hope that the words of Swami reverberate in your hearts and may the chord vibrate for eternity. Jai Sai Ram.
Every moment of my life, please be with me. In every single act of mine, be thou my guide. Baba, Sai Baba. Baba, Sai Baba. When I slip, when I fall, lend me your hand. When I stray far away, bring me back again. Baba, Sai Baba. Baba, Sai Baba. From the darkness into light, lead me Father. From unreal to the real. Please be with me. In every single act of mine, be thou my guide. Baba, Sai Baba. Baba, Sai Baba. me your hand. When I stray far away, bring me back again. Baba, Sai Baba. Baba, Sai Baba. From the darkness into light, lead.